Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We are working to get Dr. Agilore. In the meanwhile, I wanted to take a couple of minutes, Matt, to talk with you, not just about the rural hospital closures, which across this state, we have seen so many rural hospitals close already. We've seen hospitals in Eau Claire, Chippewa Falls, Augusta close. We're seeing micro hospitals across the state close. And here in Milwaukee, we're even looking at closures at the Columbia St. Mary's Hospital downtown. We're finding it especially hard to find hospitals that take Medicaid, women that are needing prenatal care or in childbirth who are on Medicaid. That is becoming increasingly difficult as well. And I do believe we now have Dr. Agilore. Dr. Agilore, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, wonderful. Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. We were just getting into the meat of it. I've been setting up this topic all half hour with my co-host, Matt Rothschild. Let me properly introduce you, Dr. Agilore. It's a pleasure to have you back on the Maggie Dawn Show here again. Dr. Agilore is the chief economist at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, formerly the senior advisor for, and this is a big mouthful, the Office of the Undersecretary for Rural Development at the USDA. The way I like to put it is you're an economist who sounds like a regular person who can explain what's going on in our rural communities when it comes to healthcare. So welcome back to the show. Tell us what's at stake, what's currently baked into the budget reconciliation bill that will directly impact our rural communities and the healthcare that they can access when it comes to this $880 million in Medicaid cuts that's slated to occur.
Thank you. So first of all, I'm glad to be back on the show. Thank you again for the invitation. And with the what's happening with Medicaid, and the reason why this is such a big deal is that they're cutting, you know, as you said, it's a massive amount, probably the biggest cut that we've seen in over 40 years, $880 billion. But the way that they're doing the cut is by adding work requirements and other administrative burdens to basically kick people off of Medicaid. If you're not, you know, if you don't have health insurance, then you're not, quote unquote, you know, spending money on health, then that's gonna, you know, cause the quote unquote savings. And so the issue here is that insurance is important to help out with the hospitals. As the impact of these rural hospitals, that their financial viability, a lot of time is based on Medicaid. And so I'll just throw out a few stats. So first of all, nearly half of all births in rural areas are financed by Medicaid. 47% of children are covered by Medicaid. And, you know, one of the reasons why is that when people are using healthcare and they don't have insurance, the hospital still has to take care of them because that's what they do. And so you have all these uncompensated care costs. And just as a comparison, in states that expanded Medicaid, 3% of uncompensated care costs are for hospitals in states that expanded Medicaid. In states that did not expand Medicaid, it's over 7%. And so you see that now with this cutting the $880 billion and, you know, up to upwards of almost 14 million people becoming uninsured, that's going to have dire impacts for rural hospitals.
I wanted to pause here because I was making this exact point as you were joining us, specifically about childbirths. So if a woman is having a baby, what is particularly risky about this scale of cuts to Medicaid is that as we move forward, if these cuts are adopted, it will be less likely that that woman will enter a hospital during childbirth with Medicaid. And if she doesn't have Medicaid and doesn't otherwise have health insurance, the hospital, of course, still has to care for her. She's having an, you know, she's in childbirth, they have to care for her. But what they won't be able to do is get the funding from Medicaid. And so what will happen is that hospitals will frankly lose revenues, lose resources, and they will be less likely to remain open going forward because they will lose a key source of revenue, i.e. Medicaid. And that, when you look at childbirths in rural areas, becomes a greater and greater risk. In other words, it snowballs as we were to move forward into the future. Am I getting that right so that folks understand how this is going to work? It's going to get worse as we go forward. It will have an increasing impact as more and more healthcare providers, including hospitals, have to reduce what they're providing or close entirely. It's not a light switch. It is, in fact, a snowball effect.
That is exactly right. And we know this because we've seen it over the last 20 years, that a lot of times that these hospitals don't close immediately, but they start losing their services. And one of the first services are the OBGYN services that go. And then once those go, then, you know, you don't have the population coming in because people, if they're thinking about moving to a community and there's a hospital and they have no OB practice, then it's like, why would you move there? So then you have this, as you said, a snowball effect, a vicious cycle. And then over time, then they start, you know, end up closing. And then the people who live there, instead of, you know, 20, 30 minutes to the nearest hospital, now it's 60, maybe 90 minutes. And that's, you know, that's devastating.
Especially if you're in labor. I mean, that's going to be an impossible situation for a woman who's in labor.
That is correct. And so that's what's so concerning about this, is that you're having these impacts in rural communities. And for what reason? You know, we're talking about Medicaid, we're talking about healthcare, but it's the same thing with SNAP and food assistance. They're cutting almost $300 billion from that. And all that to pay for a tax cut for wealthy people who already have money, who already, you know, who are already doing well, and you're, you know, doing this on the backs of low-income and middle-income families.
I want to address, like, dead on, Dr. Edgelori, the idea of, quote, work requirements and additional verifications. There is a pernicious misapprehension that I hear from conservative friends of goodwill, even those of goodwill, those who aren't trying to engage in tropes of years gone by, that folks that need Medicaid aren't working or are avoiding work. Or can you help us understand, the vast majority of people who receive Medicaid are eligible for Medicaid. There isn't some great number of people that amounts to hundreds of millions or billions of dollars that shouldn't be receiving Medicaid assistance. Am I correct there? What is the origin of these Republican moves to try to put these additional, I just call it administrative red tape that has no other purpose, not to improve the program, not to ensure that only those that are eligible are getting it, but simply to make it so much harder to get it that fewer people obtain the benefits that they're actually entitled to? Is that true? How are we to view these, quote, requirements and additional, they're trying not to say that they're cuts, but they really are. Help us understand.
So this is a long-running narrative, 40, 50 years running, where we're looking at kind of what we call the deserved poor and undeserved poor, where they try to make this image of people, you know, we've seen in the last, you know, couple decades, is they talk about the boy who's playing video games and not wanting to work and being lazy, kind of this lazy trope. And so what that does is that makes it, you know, people feel better about the cuts, and instead of actually cutting spending, what you do is just add these layers of red tape, as you mentioned, and these burden to be able to kind of make it harder for people to, who are eligible for the program, who are eligible for health insurance, it makes it difficult for them, or just a burden so high that they just give up trying. And, you know, there was, you know, data showing that most of the people who are on Medicaid are working. And the people who aren't working are the people who are disabled or who have, you know, care issues. And so everyone, I think the stat is almost like 94% of people on Medicaid are working and who are able to work. And so all this does is kick people off who are working, who are eligible from the program. And what's even worse is that some of the work requirements, you know, you have to look at, especially in these rural communities, how many opportunities for employment are there? And so there's people who are trying to work, looking for work, but the opportunities are not there. And then now they have issues with health, being able to afford health insurance and health care. And then that's, you know, making it detrimental for the whole community.
Yeah, we're speaking with Dr. Augelorio, who's the chief economist at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, a great think tank in Washington, D.C. What is the consequence, other than callousness, of making it much harder for people to get their Medicaid? Because there are downstream consequences to it.
Yeah, so we talked a lot about the rural hospitals, but you have to look at it, you know, from the individuals. The biggest material hardship for people in rural communities is medical debt. And so now you have more likely to take on medical debt. It lowers your credit score. You're more likely to have personal bankruptcies. And, you know, just again, you think about people who rack up debt and you work so hard to try to get ahead of it and you just keep falling behind, almost like it's almost like quicksand. And so now you're kicking all these people off, 14 million people, upwards of 14 million people. Now you're sticking them in quicksand and it's just going to be even harder for them to get ahead.
It seems to me, Dr. Augelorio, that if one were a very callous, calculating politician, and the purpose was very much so to simply cut programs regardless of whom that might hurt, and you knew that you couldn't walk into the halls of Congress and say, you know what, screw working people and the working poor, because that's not going to be a politically salient message, especially if you represent really hardworking folks in rural congressional districts throughout, I don't know, the western and northern parts of a state like Wisconsin. You'd have to come up with some smokescreen, something that sounds facially reasonable as you reach your hand into the pocket of those working middle-class families and the working poor and rob them blind to give tax cuts to those that already have more than any one of your actual constituents could ever, ever possibly wish for. And if you had to come up with some sort of a smokescreen and bogus rationale, one such rationale would be things that sound like work requirements and additional verification steps to receive something that is at base a human right, and that is the right to access meaningful preventative care and health care. You were addressing that in part. This is part of a multi-decades plan to distinguish between deserving poor and undeserving poor. Dr. Augelorio, shouldn't we really be talking about what rich people are deserving of such windfalls of additional tax cuts? Where should our focus truly be to understand what's at stake here?
You hit the nail on the head, focusing on the rich. So just on Friday, the credit rating service Moody's downgraded U.S. debt because of this problem of fiscal sustainability. But they're always talking about how, well, we don't have a revenue problem. It's a spending problem. We need to cut spending. We've been cutting spending for 40 years, and we still have the sustainability problem. The problem is we've been cutting taxes at the same time. And even just, you know, before 2017, but 2008, 2001, you know, all the way back to 1986, we keep cutting taxes. And at some point, you know, enough's enough. Where we want to be more fiscally sustainable, we have to raise revenue and then support the people at the low end and make a strong safety net.
We can raise revenues by taxing the rich their fair share. It's not any more complicated or simple than that. Thank you, Dr. Benga Augelorio, Chief Economist at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Go check out their website. If you don't believe us over the radio, go check out Dr. Augelorio's great work and the great work from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Our discussion of this topic continues on the other side with Matt Rothschild and me, Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.